Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is Deirdre DeLisi, Chair of the Texas Transportation Commission. At TxDOT, we're committed to improving air quality, but we can't do much about the hot air you're about to hear. Proceed with caution.
Thank you, Deirdre. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here for the first week of July. We have what is, for better or for worse, our usual lineup.
Worse.
That was CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
I thought that Deirdre's intro was good. It was as successful as the Trans-Texas Corridor. How about that?
How about that, Managing Editor Ross Ramsey?
I'd say worse.
The only podcast in America with the Trans-Texas Corridor joke.
And Ben Philpott of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
It's not that the joke was bad, but the artist representation of the joke really turned it down.
No, the joke was bad. Okay. I've been gone for a couple weeks, so I'm rusty.
Your joke? Oh, not Deirdre's joke.
No, Deirdre's joke was brilliant.
Was great. Yes. Hopefully, you're fantastic. Listening to it in a car as you drive along the wonderful Texas highways.
Indeed.
Right. We are all going to talk about, or at least some of us will talk about, the races to watch. Now that we are out of the legislative session and into election season.
It's suddenly election season.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
The clock chimed.
We're not going to get any break at all, are we?
No.
Especially not after, 2 weeks from now? The lieutenant governor said, wait for a special announcement the week of July 18th. Is that right?
I think actual July 18th.
I think he meant special as in special session.
Well, now, Ross, I think you were there for that final gaggle with me with the lieutenant governor. I need to go back and just listen to the tape, but I seem to recall when somebody asked him, so you're making an announcement the week of July 18th. Is your buddy, the governor, planning anything that will then allow you to decide what you're running for before the week of July 18th? And his answer, as I kind of recall it, was something along the lines of, yeah, sure, possibly, it could be that week. What do you remember from that? He doesn't
speak that quickly.
I didn't take anything away from that. Everybody was so shot at the end of the session, they were just blah, blah,
they
blah.
They just
blah,
wanted
blah.
To get out.
You know, he's going to do, he was, I think the significant thing about July 18th is that the session was over and he wasn't jumping into it. You remember the original plan was the legislative session was going to end, the governor's veto period was going to end.
Was going to end on the 19th of June, and we heard June 20th was
really
the date.
Really hard
right,
about
right
June
away.
20th.
And, yeah.
You know, what's significant here is that I'm bushed. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. I'll see you guys. That was kind of my takeaway.
Well, look, if it's July 18th or it's July 20th or whatever else, Dewhurst's position on the day he announces is very strong. I think we can all agree with that. I don't know whether we would say
that
it's...
Have we said what he's announcing for?
He's announcing for the United States Senate. This is the... Unless he pulls a total sneaky Pete maneuver on us at the end and announces for something else. He's announcing for the Senate. I was wondering if it then,
does it hurt him? I mean, so let's just play out the line real quickly. So Perry announces possibly after the response that he's running for president.
On August 6th.
Does it hurt?
That's his prayer event.
Yes, right. That's his, and day of fasting, where they'll have fast food, according to the website.
It's only 7 hours of fasting.
Does it hurt?
Worst Jewish holiday ever.
I think Ken Herman said that in one of his columns.
Exactly. In more ways than I can name.
But does it hurt at all, Dewhurst, if he decides to switch gears after a month and go for the governor's race? Or do you think he would?
No.
There'd be no reason for him to switch over.
The governor's race isn't until 2014. There's no reason to declare it at that point.
Okay. I mean, the argument would be if it looks as if Perry is running and gets the nomination and is on a path to win... Burka floated this morning on his blog the possibility that Dewhurst would run for the Senate, Perry would run for president, Perry wins, either is the president or the vice president of the next administration, or is even in line for a cabinet position, which I think is weird. But anyway, Burka's supposition is that Dewhurst might get elected to the Senate, but between the time that he's elected and the time that he's sworn in, he might decline to be seated if the possibility of becoming governor is on the table.
And then, of course, if Perry is in the White House in some capacity, he would be able to...
I'm sorry, that's the governor who does that. I'm completely out of water here.
It sounds like a James Patterson novel or a John Grisham novel. Sorry about that.
We can edit this.
I mean, if you want to play this parlor game out, first thing is, if Dewhurst doesn't declare for U.S. Senate, that's a shocker. I mean, everybody's set for Senate.
Michael Williams had this
moment of great candor this week. Mm-hmm. I asked him, why'd you switch to the congressional race? And he said, look, I could spin this, but I'll tell you. Dewhurst casts an awfully long shadow. He has statewide name ID. He has all of the money he needs on this race.
He's a very tall guy.
When you look at the numbers in this race and you look at the way this thing is shaping up, there's just not an obvious way around him.
Yes, but if he doesn't run, though, if he were to surprise everybody and announce for something else,
then it's an open field again.
But don't you think that the field is not set at that point? You think if Dewhurst doesn't get in, you have other people get in that race?
Yeah, all the people who didn't get in the race because of Dewhurst. In our polling, everybody else's polling is looking kind of the same on this. In our polling, 50 or 52 or 53% of people are undecided in this race.
But with Dewhurst in the poll.
And that's the part that makes you kind of go, huh, that's interesting. That's the kind of thing that people like Dan Patrick are looking at.
Right.
But the other thing you got to look at is, of the known candidates, how are they doing? And it's like, this one has 27% and everybody else is in single digits. And the one at 27% is David Dewhurst. That's the guy to beat.
But look, I'm prepared to say, I think we're all prepared to say, Dewhurst is going to get in on the 18th or that week, right? If not before.
And so what do you do if you're Dan Patrick and you're looking at this? And he has that poll that he commissioned that shows him doing much better than anyone else relative to Dewhurst. Do you decide to just sit it out, or do you try to go after the giant, I guess?
Well, he only beats me by 2 touchdowns, and he beats you guys by 3 touchdowns. That's not an argument. He gets beat.
Dan Patrick's entry into this race, I'm prepared to say, would cause one of two things to happen. Either Patrick would so divide the anybody but Dewhurst vote that Dewhurst would win without a runoff in the primary.
Right.
Because basically there are two types of candidates in this race. There's Dewhurst and there's ABD. And everybody's vying to be ABD. And I think even the most ardent anti-Dewhurst people in the race would acknowledge that this is a race between ultimately Dewhurst and the ABD candidate. Ted Cruz is right now the leading ABD candidate. He'd like to be the ABD candidate.
He's leading in fundraising, but he's not leading in polls.
but of the candidates who are still in the race, Elizabeth Ames Jones, Tom Leppert, and Ted Cruz, I think there would be general agreement that Cruz is emerging as, right now, the strongest ABD candidate in the current composition of the field.
George Will isn't writing columns about the other ones.
He's leading in endorsements. He's sort of leading
all the big national conservative guys,
stuff.
Right?
The guy with the most money is Leppert.
But the problem for Leppert, which I like Mayor Leppert. We all know Mayor Leppert a little bit. The problem for Mayor Leppert is, what is Mayor Leppert's argument vis-a-vis Cruz and Dewhurst for his unique selling proposition?
Right.
I don't know what it is.
Right.
So there may very well be one, and he may have one to articulate between now and the time that this all becomes relevant. But the point is, right now, it is Dewhurst and an ABD candidate. One scenario is Patrick gets in and he divides the ABDs further, allowing Dewhurst to get to 50%, and Dewhurst wins without a runoff. But remember what happened with Dan Patrick the first time. Dan Patrick ran initially for Senate District 7, a race that was going to be handed in a nice, neat package with a bow wrapped around it to Peggy Hamrick, the state representative. It was going to be Peggy Hamrick's seat. Dan Patrick got in this race. It was Peggy Hamrick and Joe Nixon, both state House members, both conservative Republicans.
Fourth candidate whose name I can't remember.
I can't remember the fourth candidate, but Patrick got in. I mean, Hamrick was a conservative in the old construction of a conservative. Today, Peggy Hamrick would be slammed as a moderate. But Peggy Hamrick was
a rhino.
A rhino. But Peggy Hamrick was viewed at the time as a reliable Republican. Joe Nixon got in. And then Dan Patrick got in, this talk show host who people thought, well, what's he going to do? He not only won that race, he beat everybody without a runoff. He turned that race upside down.
Didn't he have something ridiculous like 70% of the vote?
Or 63 or something.
I mean, yeah.
So one of two things happens here. Either Patrick gets in, he divides the ABD votes, and Dewhurst wins, or he turns Dewhurst into Peggy Hamrick.
Well, I think that's one of the things that
that's a possibility.
You have to consider it in... Yeah. So how high is this red tide? The red tide that swept through in 2010 and changed a lot of the makeup of the state house in Texas and across the country and Congress. So how high is that tide still? Because that's the kind of tide that would provide Senator Patrick with a win in this primary, I think.
Yep.
I mean, that's the Tea Party. That's the we're upset with the way that Republicans have been doing business kind of vote. And if it's still a high tide, then Dan Patrick is the kind of guy who
I'll observe that I really think that part of the outcome of this primary, which is on the same day as the Republican presidential, is it not the same day as the Republican presidential primary in Texas?
Yes.
Okay, if Rick Perry is on the ticket and is a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in Texas, turnout is one way. If Rick Perry is not on the ticket, turnout is another way. I actually think that to some degree the Senate primary will be impacted by the presidential primary. Don't you think?
Yeah, I do.
So do we have a guess on which hurts or helps Dewhurst? I would guess if Perry wasn't on the ticket, it might help Dewhurst.
If Perry's on the ticket, you get a big turnout. And, you know, the bigger the turnout, I mean, this is sort of the conventional wisdom, but the bigger the turnout in a primary, the more moderate the vote. The people, if you get a low turnout,
unless Perry comes out and turns out the evangelicals with great fervor, because the alternative would be they're not going to turn out for Romney.
Well, the issue there is, do the evangelicals vote most of the time? And, you know, again, just sort of conventional wisdom is that the, you know, sort of the true believers in both parties are the ones who show up for every primary. It's when you get a primary that's of great interest or that's of interest to moderates that the numbers really grow, and that tends to moderate both primaries. I mean, that's kind of the conventional wisdom. Would Perry draw in a bunch of people who, because of his ideology or because of his geography? And I think in a Texas primary, if it's still contested, it'll be geography. He's going to get the people, the social conservatives, the evangelicals, and the Tea Party people who always vote either way.
Can we talk about what's wrong with Dewhurst? I don't mean in the sense of us assessing Dewhurst's faults, but us assessing others.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hates me already. I want to talk about other people's assessments of Dewhurst's faults, and let's assess those assessments. And I'm particularly thinking of the people on the right who have decided, who have asserted that David Dewhurst is insufficiently conservative. And this begins with, but does not end with, Eric Erickson of the Red State blog, who has started an attack Twitter feed called @DuChrist, asserting that what Charlie Crist was to Florida, a Republican who was an inauthentic conservative and was not going to be handed in a coronation a federal office, David Dewhurst is same. And just as they went and found Marco Rubio to run against improbably at first, but then ultimately he overtook Crist to the point that Crist had to run as an independent. Crist in Florida for that U.S. Senate seat, and now Marco Rubio is the star of the party. They believe, Erickson and Club for Growth and Freedom Works and a bunch of these other folks believe that Ted Cruz is the Marco Rubio of this race and that David Dewhurst is the Charlie Crist. And my question is David Dewhurst really done anything that these guys can point to as inauthentically conservative?
Well, the two things you'll probably see if this narrative plays out, you're going to see that, especially if Dan Patrick gets in the race, you're going to see that TSA debate brought up over and over again.
Dewhurst asked Perry to put it on the call.
After the Senate the first time around.
But the Senate got more done on TSA this time than the House did in the special. Right.
Yeah, I my crackpot theory on this is this isn't really about ideology. A lot of this is you've got two groups of Republicans, in one way to analyze it. You've got establishment Republicans and you've got insurgent Republicans, anti-establishment Republicans. And Dewhurst, whatever his ideology, looks like an establishment Republican.
He is.
And these guys who are railing are sort of the anti-establishment. You know, you're in the castle, we're outside the castle. I don't know that this is an ideological argument against Dewhurst. I think this is more of an argument against you're in, we're out, we want in. And we're going to. Well, what I think is interesting here, and you know, we've talked about this before, is that by all rights, a guy who's been in office since 1985 ought to be considered part of the establishment.
But and somehow Perry managed to run as an outsider.
So when you hear somebody, you know, whether it's, you know, Red State or anybody else blasting the Texas legislature, one of the interesting things about it is that none of this to those guys is Perry's fault.
Well,
not, you know, putting TSA on the thing with 9 days left, really? That didn't hurt you?
Well, you know,
people
continue to bring up whether or not the lieutenant governor should have allowed the Republican agenda to just overrun the Democrats in the Senate with the two, you know, getting rid of the two-thirds rule all the time. I mean, that's been one of those constant arguments, and that was kind of played out in the House as well. The House had over two-thirds, and right. They, you know, and there was an argument back and forth there. Well, what's the matter with Strauss? Why isn't he allowing every single thing that we put up to easily pass? Why are we even, you know, playing within the rules, they don't need the Democrats to vote on anything. And I think some people were upset that the Democrats were allowed to play where mm-hmm. they could play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's maybe one fault that is brought up with Dewhurst in the Senate is, look, you get rid of this gentleman's agreement two-thirds rule, and hey, guess what? We can do whatever we want. Why aren't you doing it?
So they're blaming Dewhurst for that?
I think some people do, absolutely.
Right. Well, another thing that plays into what you were just saying about Perry is something that I've seen blogged about frequently, and it might just be because these are the blogs that I read, they bring up this issue of the new Joint Oversight Committee for Excellence in Higher Education, which was a group of legislators that will now oversee basically what regents are doing.
Bipartisan, bicameral. Right, yeah.
Now, regents are basically maybe not under the control of, but appointed by the governor. And so the creation of this joint oversight committee, which was, it was actually an idea that originated in Strauss's office, but Dewhurst agreed to it.
It's being viewed as an up yours to Perry?
It's being viewed as, yeah, going against Perry. And by going against Perry, you are not sufficiently conservative, basically is the logic, as far as I can tell.
Well, you know.
So the litmus testers are out, and they're pronouncing not just Strauss, but Dewhurst to be wanting.
I'm not convinced that they've got those two in the same bucket. I mean, Strauss is kind of a special case because they've been involved in this speaker's race a couple of times. They've been directly involved, sort of this, you know, it's like, we don't want a republic anymore. We want a direct democracy. We should be able to vote for the speaker on the internet or something, you know. But they're directly involved in those races in a way that they weren't involved in the race when Dewhurst got elected. They've never played in a Dewhurst election. You know, I mean, they've carped about him in office, you know, from time to time. But this hadn't really manifested itself in an election. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see if it does in the coming U.S. Senate race. Well, that would be something new.
And that would be interesting because I think Dewhurst could say, if people throw up the two-thirds rule to him, he could say, hey, that's great. I'm running for U.S. Senate now. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, I don't have to deal with the Texas two-thirds rule.
But in theory, he's going to run on his record.
That's true.
Right.
And his record, he will try to point to areas in which he has carried the conservative agenda as lieutenant governor over these last several years.
I mean, look at the session we just had.
Right.
I mean,
on paper,
hard to be more conservative
on paper,
than
he's got a great conservative record. You know, they will find glitches. They always do. They'll find glitches in Perry's record. They always do. But, you know, on paper, these are conservative people elected. If you'll remember back when they were elected and when they both came up, you know, Dewhurst in the case in point here, Dewhurst came up from the conservative side of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. That was their candidate. And I don't know that he's done anything really that...
And his money
has those groups running away from
and
him.
And his money is as much of an advantage as everybody says it is.
Yeah, you know, pile up the bricks. I think Strauss has collected more bricks from those people than Dewhurst has. He's got one or two guys on, you know, Red State or this blog or the other blog, but... You know, in terms of...
There's not a Stop David Dewhurst website.
In terms of the activists coming
just
out
a Twitter feed.
And sort of, you know, this guy's with us, this guy's against us, I think Strauss is a much different deal. A quick footnote, it was Mark Ellis was the fourth candidate.
Oh, right, Mark and Ellis. Was he a city councilman in Houston,
right,
am I remembering?
Right, yeah. And Dan Patrick got 68.8%.
Well, I was right with that.
And Peggy Hamrick got some ridiculously small number.
She got 16.45%.
And she was inevitable.
Right.
I mean, truly, she was
and
inevitable
Nixon,
going
who was
into
an incumbent House member, got 8.6%.
Well, when you assume...
Patrick hammered those guys. I would be surprised at this point. I mean, we got 3 years for this, but I'd be surprised if Patrick's not a lieutenant governor candidate.
You think that instead of running for the Senate, Patrick will get in that 2014 race, which Patterson and Staples and Combs are now said to be in?
And potentially in the late 2012, early 2013 race, which if Dewhurst were elected U.S. Senate...
Could Dan Patrick win a vote of the 31 senators to become the interim lieutenant governor?
It depends. I mean, if the model here is what the Senate has always done, my guess would be probably not. If the model here is, well, we're going to have a Senate race and it's going to work like a speaker race, why wouldn't it work like a speaker race?
You
why
mean aren't lieutenant all the, governor's race?
Well, yeah. And why aren't all of the bloggers and activists and third parties... as involved in a race for lieutenant governor as they were in House.
Time to spend a second on this?
Just you can have 2 seconds.
Okay, later. So the three people who emerged while you were off riding the Matterhorn or whatever the hell you were doing a couple weeks ago when we did the inside intelligence about this race, about if Dewhurst goes, then what happens and they vote. The three people who finished at the top were Duncan, Eltif, and Ogden.
Right.
So by your supposition, the outside groups would be pissed off at Duncan over the resolution of SB 1 and Sanctuary Cities.
And Perry put the mark on his forehead.
And they've never trusted Eltif, correct? They all think Eltif is a squish.
Well, Eltif was out front on we should use the rainy day fund.
Right, so Eltif goes.
Right.
Ogden is in theory not going to run again.
Well, that's, you know, Ogden hadn't announced a decision.
But has Ogden reaffirmed by the end his conservative bona fides? Because for a while there, Ogden was what passed for a liberal in this session.
Well, I mean, just because he was saying we got to be responsible about the budget. I mean, he didn't go spend a bunch.
This session pegged you as a liberal.
He didn't go spend a bunch of money. He's a reliable social conservative. He's been a conservative.
Ogden is my definition of a conservative by all right, but I don't know that he would qualify with the outside guys.
There's a reason why Simpson didn't vote for the budget. It didn't cut enough.
You know, if you were one of these people, if you were a senator and you were running for this job, one thing you look at is you say, okay, if my caucus is in the majority, if I'm in the Republican caucus and we go off in a room and the Republican caucus picks someone, we can win if they all stick together. Would I win in the Republican caucus? And if you think the answers to those questions are yes, then that's what you do. If you think the answer is, well, my chance is best if I get five Republicans and all the Democrats, that's a different calculation.
Well, there's the point.
And then what happens is the outside activists come in and begin to enforce one side of that question or the other. And I think that those guys are going to learn all about how Joe Strauss has run speakers races. I think the third parties and the outside groups are going to be all over that.
This is a majority vote. Right. So it's 16 of 31. Right. There are 19 Republicans.
Right. Everybody's first choice is themselves.
Right. There are 19
the question
Republicans.
Is, who's your second choice?
The Democrats will, in theory, be a block. But the Republicans don't need a single Democrat. A Republican does not need a single Democrat if he or she can get 16 votes.
Right.
The question is there a single Republican senator who, by virtue of personality and ideological leaning, can get 16 votes? Is there a single one?
I think there probably is. You know, but the question is, you know, just sort of, you know, it really is everybody's second choice. You know, the joke when George Bush moved up and Rick Perry then moved up, and they were electing a new one, was, okay, so the first vote is going to be 1-1-1-1-1-1 31 times, right? I voted for myself, right? The second vote, there were five. The third vote, there were three, and then there were two. It was just like very quickly sorted out because they didn't do it in caucus. I think in this Senate, the people
that... they will do it in caucus?
I think they potentially could. I mean, you know, the people that are arguing for, you know, you should get rid of the two-thirds rule, that's a thing that empowers caucuses. That means that the minority no longer gets to choose on things like this, right? The first thing, the first casualty of a two-thirds rule is the minority, whoever it is. So then you go into a Republican caucus and you pick, and you enforce the Republican caucus, and you probably do that with the aid of outside groups who tell Republicans, we're going to hold your feet to the fire if you don't vote with the caucus, right? We had an argument like this in the last speaker's race where the caucus went, and by the time they voted, they'd engineered it so the caucus voted for Strauss. And Chisholm, remember this? Chisholm decided to abide by the caucus. But there was a point there where, had they had the election in the caucus, that caucus probably was not going to vote for Strauss at the very beginning of that thing. I think we're going to see the same movie in a different chamber.
Of course, we have yet to get to the point where this actually happens.
Right.
Two weeks.
Well, first you got to get, you know, either David Dewhurst or Rick Perry has to win federal office. Right, and clear one of those spots. If Perry wins and Dewhurst doesn't, Dewhurst moves up. If Perry loses and Dewhurst wins, there's a hole at the top of the Senate. If they both win, the senators pick a senator who becomes governor.
But we can agree that the great likelihood is that the 2013 session, the Senate will be presided over by somebody who is not David Dewhurst. That is the greater likelihood.
That's the bet at the moment if you think he comes out of the primary and if you think Ricardo Sanchez doesn't mount a campaign.
Can we move on to some races that are definitely happening?
Yes.
Then for a second, I just wonder, two of the congressional races that have already started heating up, although I guess they are at this point still somewhat as theoretical as the one we were just discussing, are the Castro-Doggett race and the Williams-Williams race.
Williams versus Williams versus Williams versus Williams, right. Up in Arlington.
As I've said on Twitter, I'm for Lucinda Williams in that race, actually.
You were
with William Carlos Williams.
That's right.
Which was a totally boring, effete Vanderbilt reference.
I'm going to cast a memorial vote for Hank Williams.
Ben?
Ricky Williams?
Oh, great. That stoner guy.
You mean the UT running back... amazing.
Are these races definitely happening? I mean, they're happening because both sides are bickering with each other.
Right? Today there are 14 lawsuits in various parts of Texas against the Congressional, House, Senate, and SBOE maps.
But they're not going to get settled before Election Day, right?
I think they are. I think the courts will have, you know, sort of the past as premise here. I think the courts will probably have some map in place for the filing deadlines and for the 2012 elections, but I'm not sure that the maps that are used in the 2012 elections will be the maps in place in the 2014 elections.
Well,
the courts could sort of stretch this out.
I thought, because, you know, so we go back to 2003, when the congressional redistricting was done in 2004, those were the maps that were used. You know, Lloyd Doggett had to do one of those bacon strip districts,
right?
And won. And then 2006 comes around, and by then we've had the district court, I believe it was, say that the map that one district was not good with the Voters' Rights Act, and they redid four of them, I think, or three of them.
Four of them, right.
Lloyd Doggett was one of those. So they had a second set of maps in the other election. I just kind of assumed it would be the same way this time. They would go with whatever the legislature passed for one election cycle, but then you would have a different one in the next one.
I think you'll get some changes from the courts on these maps before the first election. The congressional maps and the House maps are in particular contest. I mean, there's some disagreement over the Senate map and whether it's fair, but there's less disagreement over that than there are the others. The timelines are really tight here. You know, it's the beginning of July. They passed a bill while we were doing all that other stuff. They passed a bill that moved the filing deadlines back a month. So instead of having to file by the first week of January, you now have to file by the first week of December. So you have this very short period within which to take all 14 of these cases, or however many there are, to consolidate them under one judge, to run them through either the D.C. Circuit or through the Department of Justice, and to run them through court, and to set the lines, and to conduct elections. And so there, a lot of this stuff will probably, a lot of the legal questions will probably be pending even after the elections, and we could get another set of maps too.
Well, that's one thing I hadn't thought of is whether or not preclearance comes in with this.
Right.
You know, I mean, that did not happen in 2003. They weren't worried about that.
There's this big, you know, there's a big legal hairball between now and the elections, and it won't be completely untangled, I don't think, by 2012. So the chances are that we'll get some changes in the congressional maps and then the Texas House maps.
So do you just run for these races anyway?
You run under the lines they've got. You basically,
I think you run assuming that the maps are the maps.
Right.
And if stuff changes, then stuff changes.
And so who would you guys say are the favorites? In,
well, Julian Castro's first meet and greet in Austin is tonight.
Except his name is Joaquin.
Yeah, but you
never know which one's going to show up.
I'm sorry. Joaquin Castro's first meet and greet in Austin is tonight. And in the interest of equal time, you know, Joaquin did our first celebrity intro. I'm in the process of getting Lloyd Doggett to do one for us as well, so we can, you know.
We don't want to get in trouble with the FCC.
That's right, we don't, yeah. Especially on a podcast.
Right. That's right.
And what about up in Williams v. Williams?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting race. There were a bunch of other people that were looking at it. And
that's Michael Williams and Roger Williams.
Right. Michael Williams is a former Railroad Commissioner. Roger Williams is a former Texas Secretary of State. Michael has run statewide campaigns and campaigns, you know, before. Roger, I don't think, has ever run for office. He's raised money for George Bush and for
Rick Perry.
And he was the head of people.
Yeah. Look, this is the interesting thing here is going to be, so George H.W., George Bush the Elder, endorsed Roger Williams in the Senate race some time ago. I assume he'll endorse Roger Williams in the congressional race.
That's interesting.
Who was George... I just gave it away.
Yeah.
Who was Michael Williams' campaign manager when Michael Williams ran for county attorney back in Midland years ago? George W.
Bush, right.
So wouldn't it be interesting if George W. Bush endorsed his old friend Michael Williams? And if George H.W. Bush endorsed Roger Williams?
It's really interesting.
You would have a Bush versus Bush.
It would tear the Bush family apart.
The district is sort of centered in Arlington, so it includes the ballpark in Arlington, so we get all of that. It has a piece of Fort Worth and all of Parker County and part of Wise County. They've kind of split endorsements. A lot of the establishment endorsements in Fort Worth and in Parker County went with Roger. A couple of big players.
But Michael's got a good list.
Michael's got a good list. I think this is going to be a really interesting race. And it looks like the two of them have scared most everybody else out of the race.
Sure.
So, you know, the Vandegrifts and the Kellys and all of those guys look like they're not going to run. So it looks like Williams v. Williams.
Well, we've asked both Roger and Michael to sit down with me.
And do the celebrity intro of the podcast.
Do a forum in the district.
Right.
And both have agreed.
That's great.
So we will have an event up in that district where I'll sit down with the two of them and we'll do a mano a mano deal, which I think will be fun.
A lot of these other congressional races are just still forming up. They haven't really declared yet. You know, there's talk of Tuffy Hamilton running or James White running, two House members over
there's
in the
talk of
East
Jason
Texas
Isaac
district.
Running in a district in what would have been Lloyd Doggett's old district.
Yeah, now Austin has an empty seat. So right. Austin and Hays County has a empty seat.
That's what happens when you have 12 different congressional districts within a county.
Senator Mike Jackson's talking about a congressional race. So, you know, there's a lot still to come. I think there's a lot of people kind of moving around.
Well, you know who's probably pretty excited about that is Deirdre DeLisi. So we should turn this back over to her for a second.
Questions, comments, and inquiries about the TribCast can be sent to podcasts@texastribune.org.
All right, and thank you. On behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, and Todd, our producer, this is Reeve Hamilton. Thanks for listening. It was like, it's time to make the move to LA.